For over 6 years, Hank Thorpe hosted All of the Above Radio, the most intelligent, honest, and eclectic combo of music and talk that you never heard. But the more things change, the more things stay the same. Hank is back with a new version of the old scene. No more music, no more time constraints, but he still has great stories, great interviews, and more passion than a novel with Fabio on the cover. Once upon a time, Hank Thorpe was your bastion of good music, good talk, and full escapism. Now, Hank is your bastion for punchlines, passion, and perspective. Hank Thorpe, your former, present, and future favorite podcast host, presents all new, all different, but still, All of the Above.
You know what I'm going to do? I think I'm going to blame the undiagnosed ADHD that I have on not being the most prolific and best podcaster in the world. That feels nice and convenient and lazy. I think we'll go with that. Welcome to All New, All Different, All of the Above. It is lovely to talk to you once again. My name is Hank. Hey, how you doing? You can find me on facebook.com/allofthe above radio. You can find me on Instagram at Hank Told You So or at Hank. Hey, how you doing? You can send me a personal email, allofthe above radio@gmail.com. And if you were in need of my massage services and you live in the local DFW Metroplex, send me an email at thehelpfulhandsofhenry@gmail.com. More on that in just a little bit. So, I've been having this thought process for really a larger chunk of my life, but it kind of flares up like a raw nerve in certain scenarios. And so I'm going to go backwards and ask you a question. Have you ever heard of the phrase Jack or Jane of all trades? I'm sure you have. I'm absolutely sure you have. I am going to give you the Wikipedia definition. Jack of all trades, master of none, is a figure of speech used in reference to a person who has dabbled in many skills rather than gaining expertise by focusing on only one. So, I ask you, my friend, listener, and or enemy, what do you consider yourself? Do you consider yourself a Jack or Jane of all trades? Or a master of one? So, we expand. If you were to look at somebody like Tom Brady, for example, he would be considered a master of his trade. And that's kind of an obvious statement, but just go with me for a second. So he is probably at a young age, I would guess a 6-year-old Tom Brady started to show signs of growth, and he was probably playing baseball, basketball, and football. And as his talent for football started to kind of set itself apart from the other sports, his parents may very well have made him focus in on just the one. I don't know his story for a fact, but I know the concept of it. And if you know an athlete that was pushed into that, you just go ahead and throw his name in there instead. Tom Brady has, what does he have, 7 Super Bowl rings? I think he won 6 with the Patriots and 1 with Tampa. Sorry about that, Chiefs fans. I have to apologize to my wife. They've won 2 since, or they've won another one since. They're fine. But to be at the level that Tom Brady was at, and to be any athlete of that level, to be at the level of a Tom Brady or a Sidney Crosby or a Corey Seager, hashtag go and take it, or Luka Doncic, you have to be so dedicated to your craft. You have to be dedicated to one thing, and you have to have chosen your craft somewhat early in life, 90% of the time. You can be an athlete who is good at baseball, basketball, football. You could be, what is that kid's name from the University of Colorado that's playing two ways right now? I don't remember. It's kind of not important. But there is a college football player who is in the mold of Deion Sanders playing both ways. And at some point, once he gets to the NFL, he will be forced to pick one and forced to get better at it. Sure, he could be a gadget every now and then on offense or defense, whichever opposite he chooses, but he will be forced to pick one and focus in on it. The stories are very rare of the Michael Strahans of the world of wasn't playing football until his junior year of high school, just a physical freak, blah, blah, blah. Usually, if you are an athlete at the highest level of that top 1%, you had to have started by making a choice early in your life and focusing in on that and going to summer camps and playing in spring league. When your high school plays in the fall, you're playing in the spring. And then when the summer rolls around, when the kids got part-time jobs, you're seeing a hitting coach or a throwing coach 3 times a year or throughout the summer. If you watch the TV show Quarterback on Netflix, I know a lot of you did, you saw the amount of different people that Patrick Mahomes was paying and Kirk Cousins was paying to stay at the top of their game. Physical trainers, mental trainers, dynamic training, just all of these different ways to keep your body and your brain at the absolute highest. Your focus has to be so absolutely at the top of its game so that your body and your brain can stay at the top of its game. You have to focus in on that one thing so impressively to get the ultimate returns. And it's crazy to think that this is the top 1% we're talking about. This is the people in the NFL. Drop down and look at the kids who played in college or the people who got just up to the USFL or the XFL. They are still better athletes than me. The one day I was at my absolute best athletically, I don't know when the hell it was, I'm just saying, I'm sure there was a day that I was at my athletic best, I still would get outrun, outlifted, outpushed, overpowered in any way, shape, or form by the worst athlete. That's a fun conversation to have. The local sports stations will frequently do this. Of could you at 40 years old play one-on-one with a junior high basketball team and win or something like that? There's a reasonable chance that LeBron James's son Bronny is still better than me, like a cagey veteran human being. He was probably better than me at 13 years old at his chosen sport, which is humbling and amazing. And I will back off talking about athletes for 1 second, but I needed to kind of start painting on the canvas for you to understand where I'm going with all of this. To be a master of one thing is so mind-blowing to me. Why, you ask? Is because there's so many interesting things in the world to do. There are so many, interesting things in the world to see and feel and learn and experience. As many things as I have been interested in, as many things as I like doing, as many things as I might be good at doing, I have never spent the time focusing in on just one to be excellent at it. Because I will sit here and tell you, with some level of humility and confidence, I will tell you, I am a good bartender. I am a good massage therapist. Once upon a time, I was a good video gamer. At one point or another, I was a pretty good indoor rock climber. And, here we are chatting, I am a good podcaster. So we're going to just take a quick second, or slightly more than, and break down all of those. So, me getting into bartending, I wanted to do it for some short amount of time to gain the experience and to just find a way to interact with people in a way that didn't compromise my, at times, crippling social issue. And anybody who ever has ever seen me work behind a bar would probably wonder, do you really have a crippling social issue? Well, I want you to, if you know me well enough to have been invited into my home, do yourself a favor and watch where a large chunk of my conversations take place. I'm usually standing in the kitchen, leaning up against the sink or next to it, and people are on the other side of the kitchen counter. I don't necessarily know the security that gives me, but I know, I mean, in some way or another, it gives me the comfort of just being at my job and being able to push into character just a little bit. Now, the best conversations and most fun conversations I have are when I'm sitting on the couch or sitting at a chair chatting with somebody. Those are some of my most fun, but don't be surprised if you see me when I'm not at work and I'm standing, if I'm standing behind something with something in between me and somebody else. But as the years have rolled on, for a long time it was purely a way to get over social anxiety or to meet women or to make money. It was just kind of a thing I did. And it was just a way to take advantage of the fact that one of my worldly superpowers is being nice to people. Being nice to people while making drinks. Okay. And I have said over and over again that a trained chimp can be a bartender. But it does take a little bit of extra work to be good at it, to have some nuance to it. I tend to think I have some of that. But I'll tell you, there are some things I don't have. I got to meet somebody a few months back. It was a random night. I think it was a Tuesday. I got to go to a Dallas Stars playoff hockey game with one of my buddies. And we went to this bar. If you're in local DFW and you've been in downtown Dallas, you're probably familiar. Went to a place called Billy Can Can. It's a big restaurant with a long bar and then a huge area of seating The rent has to be ridiculous because it's in downtown Dallas, but that's another question for later. And we went there for dinner and before the game, and we liked the cocktail so much that as soon as the game was over, we walked back over there to get one more drink. And you know me, I had to get a burger because I don't buy food at a stadium unless it's an event. I don't buy food. It's too expensive and it's not going to taste good. I'm not getting dollar store nachos. I'm just not doing it. Anyway, I got to meet a woman named Elizabeth Hooker. Semi-unfortunate name, but I'll never forget it. And very unassumingly, she was my server that night, but she had just been working there for maybe a week and a half and was getting ready to get flexed into the bar. And we were talking back and forth about bitter amaros and adding bitters to cocktails and this, that, and whatever. Just kind of random bartender talk back and forth. And the more we start talking, the more I realize just how quietly talented and intelligent she was. Proceeds to tell me that from North Carolina, she has moved to Dallas X amount, like a year ago, and has worked at this place and this place, and is nominated for best bartender in DFW. This person who's walking around with her big brown hair up in a bun because it's the end of the night, just wanting to go home, is a powerhouse. And I went and found the article where it talks about her list of achievements, and somebody that unassuming and that quiet was just that good. And I have wanted to go back ever since and just sit at her bar and watch her make drinks. And speaking of Netflix, well, and by the way, we won't go to Netflix just yet. Even in my own place of work, there are people similar to Elizabeth Hooker, one of my coworkers. He was very recently using a rapid infuser to make a dark cacao infused mezcal because he just was randomly toying with making a chocolate pretzel, or a chocolate covered pretzel old fashioned with mezcal. I mean, you have to be watching YouTube, you have to be reading cookbooks, you have to be buying expensive equipment to do all of this stuff. One time he came in, he asked our manager, and she ordered some demerara sugar for a project he wanted to work on, and he just decided he wanted to make his own high-proof eggnog. Just came in on his day off, used the mixer in the back of the kitchen, whipped up the eggs, put together the demerara syrup, so on and so on and so on. This guy just randomly is walking around with this amazing basket of knowledge and carry out. And it's really awesome to be around people like this. And at the same time, it does make you know just how much more there is to learn if you were to decide to focus. And if you've ever wondered, so for those of you, as the years have rolled on, and I've talked about this, there's so many trends that have happened in bartending, or so many, the mark of how good of a bartender you are. Are you a bartender or a mixologist? How do you flair? How do you make your old fashioned? Oh boy. If you want a current day definition of what bartending can be, if you've only ever thought it was some guy holding a glass and shining it with a towel, if you've only ever thought it was Tom Cruise flipping bottles, if you've only ever thought it was a semi-scuzzy character who is going to bang your sister, while you're sitting having a drink, and suddenly you think your sister disappeared to the bathroom, but no, she's in the back with the bartender. Watch the TV show Drink Masters. Netflix put out a competition show called Drink Masters over the summer, I want to say. And it was a competition where I want to say they started with 13 bartenders, mixologists, cocktail makers, whatever they would like to be called. I will respectfully cede to whatever they want to be called. And these people from Montreal, from Vegas, from Albuquerque, from DC, these people are boiling, are rapid infusing, are clarifying, are fat washing, are designing not only unbelievably layered flavors, but also disturbingly beautiful backdrops to lay their cocktails on. And it was truly humbling to watch the show. But here's where me being a jack of all trades comes in. I watch this competition and I think, wow, that's a lot of extra work that I would need to put in to get to that level. That's a lot of extra time I would have to spend to get to that level. Do I like the idea of it? Yeah, kinda. But then I also thought about watching that competition knowing that there was $100,000 on the line. And any local big city you live in that has any level of restaurant and bar scene has competitions like this. Look it up. You can find it. It might take a minute, but you can find it. You get into the right circles, you can find it. I don't want to enter a competition of just the best bartenders in my local Metroplex for the fear of losing, let alone put myself up against the top 13 in the world, or at least in North America. But still, you get the idea. To be at that level of bartender requires just as much focus and time as it would to be Patrick Mahomes, to be in the 1% of anything requires that much. And the only reason I said video games earlier, by the way, I watch on YouTube every so often. There's a channel called Arino Games, A-R-I-N-O Games. And I'm not 1,000,000% sure how they do it, but I am taking a shot in the dark that they create the game and they play it themselves. So what they do is they take fighting game characters from any game you could think of and pit them against each other and to see what the fight would look like. It's the same way that ESPN used to do the dream matchups, where they would digitally impose the 1977 Steelers up against the 1985 Bears, for example. That one didn't happen, but you get the idea. They somehow figured out how to put Franco Harris running up and getting ready to go head-to-head with Ken Norton Jr. These are names that you may not know. Not the point. They are athletes. They exist. But I watch Arena Games and I watch the fighting sequences that they put together. I watch the counters. I watch the attacks. I watch the throws, the blocks, the specials. I watch all of that because once upon a time, and I think I've told you this a time or two, once upon a time, I was one of the better Street Fighter II players you could find in a certain sector of New Jersey. I would go to the Rockaway Mall, and I could play Street Fighter II My mother would usually give me an hour at the arcade that was across the way from the inner theater at the Rockaway Mall. So they had an inner and an outer theater. The inner theater had an arcade right across the way. And Mom would say, "You got an hour. I'll see you later." And she would go to Macy's or Lord and Taylor or Babbage's to buy Christmas presents for me, whatever. She would hand me $5 and say, "I'll see you later." So if I wanted to, I could play on two tokens. $1 would get you 4 tokens. I could play for an hour on 2 tokens. I could, the same way the Black Widow runs the pool table, I used to be able to run the table on Street Fighter 2. Anybody showed up, I could whoop their ass. I was good. Now, I was born in the wrong age because online play wasn't a thing until maybe like 2003 or so. And I had kind of started to fade from video games because I got a long-term girlfriend. And then we split up and I went to work full time as a bartender and was out drinking full time. And so my video gaming just fell off and I never bought a gaming system where online play was a thing. So at my best playing of Street Fighter 2, I was probably good to great, but still not excellent. Valentine's Day, we decided to do something a little different. So my wife, my good buddy and his gal, and then two other people, one of my buddies and his wife, we met at Bishop's Cidercade. So the Bishop's Cidercade is this big old arcade and they brew cider, and they had a Valentine's Day party where you had to pick one of three colors. You wore red for stop if you were in a relationship, you wore green if you were single, and you wore yellow if it was complicated. And so my wife and I put on red and we went, and you got to meet some really interesting people. But one person I met, he was sitting down playing Guilty Gear, a really cool fighting game that came out for, I think the first one was PlayStation 2. And I was watching him play, and on the newer fighting games, starting with maybe Marvel vs. Capcom, they had a practice mode where you got to pick from one of, I think it's 35 different scenarios. So you can just train on one move. And I watched him train. He was crouching down, doing an uppercut, and jumping into the air to launch a combo. This is words that are making sense to a very small percentage of you, but those who get it are saying, "Oh yeah, that's a real pain in the ass. I hate that super jump." Anyway, so I just watched him. And he did it for probably 5 minutes. And I just said, "Hey man, that was a really good combo." He says, "Well, my timing was off on that one. I got to try it again." So we got to talking about how he will spend hours with one character working on one move to get it down and get the timing right. And that was, once again, a level of dedication that I lacked. Because I played Marvel vs. Capcom 2 on Sega Dreamcast. Yes, I'm aging myself a little bit. And I remember the practice mode. I would mess around with the practice mode, but I really spent most of my time, one, trying to figure out Akuma's level 3 attack, and two, just hitting people with specials just because they were fun to watch. I never grew into understanding the concept of blocking in the air or countering a throw or to launch that super combo. Had I spent more time doing that, maybe I would feel confident walking into Free Play Arcade and playing in one of these Street Fighter tournaments. One year, my birthday was at Free Play in Richardson. Another one of the adult-style arcades where you pay $15 and it's unlimited gaming and they have a full bar and kitchen. I love the concept. Love the concept. And once upon a time, I have no idea if they still do, but Free Play Arcade in Richardson used to have a monthly Street Fighter tournament where they had 8 machines and the machines were facing the opposite way of each other, so all you could see was your machine, and on the other side of your machine was your opponent looking at his machine. So you were playing against each other, but you were playing against each other not standing next to each other. Genius concept. It's really fun to watch. And I just sat down and played one round, and the guy who was running the tournament, he pulled me aside. He said, "Hey, man, have you thought about joining our tournament league?" I said, "I don't normally have Sundays off. It's kind of, you know, this, that, or whatever." He says, "Dude, you can fight. You just, if you had a little bit more practice, you could really be in on this." And I don't know if he was pumping sunshine down my throat or if he was actually telling me, like, I had potential to play. But once upon a time, I was really good. And once again, much like the TV show Drink Masters exists, much like the NFL exists, there is money in video gaming. So I'm sure at some point or another, you've heard one of your friends probably has a kid who says, "I'm going to be a gamer when I grow up." And you've probably laughed in their face. But those yearly Call of Duty tournaments, there's a lot of money in those. And if you want to talk about money, he's one of my absolute closest friends. He was my best man in my wedding. He is a player of the game Rocket League. Never heard of it. It is a soccer game with cars. An oversized metallic soccer ball is being pushed and kicked by cars. So you can drive on the ground and dribble the ball, and then you can lift your car up and do flips to kick the ball. So it's a giant soccer game with cars. If you ever were to think, "Oh, there's nothing going on in the video game world," me, my best man, and our friend, who was one of my groomswomen, we paid money, actual money, to buy tickets to see Rocket League played live in an arena. Dickie's Arena, where I once saw the Black Keys, where college basketball is played on a very regular basis, where I want to say minor league hockey is played. We went and watched to a packed crowd. We watched people sit in the middle of this building at computers play Rocket League and had a freaking amazing time doing it. It was so fun to watch those screens as Team G2 is playing, to watch JNaps in Chicago play the competition and get to the finals. And when you break it down, and NBA 2K is another one, Madden is another one, where people are sponsored and people live in houses together. They have training sessions, they have coaches, they have rotations. To be at that level, to be where I was as a Street Fighter 2 player, to suddenly become at a level of where a person like JNaps or Chicago is at Rocket League, I repeat, is the same thing as Patrick Mahomes or Kirk Cousins. And I love video games to this day. But like I said, I got out just a little bit early. I wasn't at a spot where I could comfortably feel like I was doing anything with it and making money. Playing online wasn't a thing yet, and making money off of it most assuredly was not a thing. I will keep that one as pure enjoyment when I go to bars and play. And let's just be honest. My timing is way off because anybody who's of a certain age, when you play video games at an arcade machine, tell me your carpal tunnel doesn't go crazy. Tell me your wrists don't hurt like crazy when you're done playing. Tell me you don't have to find the nearest chair so that you can angle your hands properly so that they're not hurting like crazy while you're playing. The struggle of aging is real, ladies and gentlemen. It's very real. Oh, boy. So let's look at indoor rock climbing for one quick second. I just put this one on in terms of being a jack of all trades, just for the heck of it, because I was never really even good at it, but it's another thing that I spent over a year doing, and for some chunk of it, enjoying it. It is something that you couldn't have convinced me, we'll say 5 years ago, that I would do it. As a matter of fact, the same friend, not the best man, but the other friend I went to see Rocket League with, she tried to get me, we'll say 10 or so years ago, 12 years ago maybe, she tried to get me to go indoor rock climbing. She said, hey, I found this workout. It's new to me, but it's been around for a while. I really love it. It's a indoor rock climbing studio or indoor rock climbing gym. It's really fun. I would love for you to try it with me sometime. She was single at the time. I was single. When you're single, you kind of take the Voltron approach and you outsource all the different parts of you that need to be fulfilled by one person, and you do it with multiple people. And even still, when you are with one person, you still need to outsource some things because one person can't be everything. But anyway, so she wanted to work out with me, which I didn't hate the idea, but I will just very quickly and jokingly say, for those of you who have never seen a picture of me, I am dark. I am not Wesley Snipes. But I am also not Patrick Mahomes. Okay. So when she invited me to go indoor rock climbing, we'll say 11 years ago, I just thought, man, that is the whitest thing somebody has asked me to do in a really long time. I have no interest in that. I want no part of that. That's really corny. So fast forward to, we'll call it, late 2021, right around maybe October or so, my wife is looking for a new way to work out. She's looking for a new thing. And so I was looking along with her and that very same friend. I texted her. I said, hey, do you still like indoor rock climbing? Do you still do it? That same friend that tried to convince me 11 years ago. She says, I haven't done it in a while, but I still love it. I would join you guys. That'd be great. So her and her sister met up with me and my then girlfriend, now wife. And had a pretty good time. And so from there, we got a membership. And girlfriend / fiance at that point. Yes, fiance. So we were doing it a couple of times a week. At one point, I had we've had this conversation before when I've done the 30-day goals. One month, my goal was to get in 10 climbs, which would have been to go twice a week, slightly more than. And I did. And I had a ton of fun doing it. And they have different color courses. White is beginner. Black is the most expert. And they go from there to yellow, to green, to red, to blue, to purple, to orange. Or I think I'm getting the general concept. Similar to being a black belt in karate. You start with white and you go all the way up. And I wonder if whomever designed indoor rock climbing was actually basing it off of martial arts training. Something else I did as a kid, by the way, I took Taekwondo. I didn't want to take that one. My mother wanted me to exercise more. I did that for a little while. And the combination of me hating it and mom not wanting to spend more money on it, that one ended. Same thing with tennis, by the way. I actually loved tennis. I just wasn't good enough at it, and I was way too lazy. I was really lazy with tennis. If somebody got a good shot on me, I wasn't chasing the ball down. I was just like, hey, man, good shot. And Taekwondo, yeah, I just didn't want to do it. But rock climbing, I got to maybe the color blue a couple times, and it started to get harder, but I also started to think, wow, I'm kind of enjoying the challenge of this. And then, as I've talked to you guys over and over again, time kind of gets away from you. Other stuff starts kind of getting in front of it, and anything that you want to do well requires time. This is the whole crux of what we're talking about. The idea of getting in any workout, and those of you who are adults with other things to do know this. To put in any workout requires, we'll just say, an hour. If you're not going anywhere, if you're just popping in a video on YouTube, it probably still takes an hour. 30-minute video, 10 minutes of stretching on either side, go to the bathroom, fill up your water, whatever. Now, if you got to drive somewhere and you want to practice on something, if you want to keep track of what your progress is, what your timing is, you're looking at more like 2 hours. And it just unfortunately got to a point where my time got more important doing other things than climbing. Hard truth, one of those being sleep. The older I get, the more I need it. Or the more I understand that if I don't get good sleep, I will be garbage the rest of the day. It's sad. But it's truth. Younger versions of me could have slept a lot less or slept more poorly and still just whipped on through the day. That is not the case. Which is hard when you married somebody 11 years younger. Once again, another thing that I've watched other people do it, I've barely watched any of the climbing events. Whenever you go to a lot of climbing gyms, they will have on loop the competitive events where the best in the world are doing it. And it's amazing to watch. But truthfully, I never even got to that level of recognition. I was just busy watching the people in the same gym as me be really good and thinking, wow, that's impressive. But that one is a much lower example of something that I was once good at and chose not to be excellent at it. So here we are talking about massage. So once upon a time, and I'm pretty sure I've told you the story, I was having a rough go of it at my job. And my 40th birthday was coming around the corner, and I now had the girl that I'm pretty sure was my future But at my job, I was feeling real stale. And I listened to the audiobook, The Alchemist. And that book, as fairy tale as it may be, is a great book to, if nothing else, show you that if you want something bad enough, there is a reasonable chance that there are people in your life that will help you get there. That's really what you take from the book, is that if you are focused in and you bust your ass, people around you notice you busting your ass and putting in the work, and they will help you get to where you're trying to be. Good people. And you know what? The haters help you too. The haters help you get to the direction you want to be if you properly place them where they need to be. But I listened to The Alchemist right before I turned 40, and I had been interested in being a massage therapist since I was 18 years old. And I had two different girlfriends that said to me, "I'm not comfortable with you being a massage therapist. I don't like the idea of you touching other women." Which was yet another reason, partly why I never went into it or looked into it or became more interested in it. And then I happened to find a woman that said, "I don't care. You're coming home to me." So, well, that's kind of cool. Thanks. I like that. That's a good way of looking at it. And so I had the time and I had the money saved up where I said, "I think I can do this." January of 2019, and apologies if you've listened to All New, All Different, All of the Above, and I told you that story already. But all of this to build into me being a jack of all trades. The day after the Super Bowl, the Patriots beat the Rams. The day after the Super Bowl is my first day of school, and I have been a licensed massage therapist in the state of Texas since November 13th of 2019. And I have worked in big box massage. I have worked as a mobile massage therapist, just driving to people's homes. I've done a little bit of this, a little bit of that. And I love it. I love it. I genuinely enjoy it. But what I also know, being around certain people, is just how much there is to learn and just how much of a baby I still am in the business. And I refer to him as one of my mentors. I don't know that he feels that way about me. I don't know that he ever feels like I'm one of his pupils. But I tend to think he is one of my mentors. Whenever he takes my leg and moves it in a different direction, or whenever he takes his finger and pushes on my spine in a certain way, whenever he pulls on my neck from an angle that I've never even conceptualized before, I try as best as I can to figure out the move he's doing, but sometimes I'll just ask him, "Hey, where'd you get that from?" And he'll proceed to say, "Well, I spent 3 weeks in India learning Ayurvedic massage, and I was able to pick up this technique there while I was taking a class." That whole sentence is just unbelievable. Just, you went to India for 3 weeks to take a massage class, to bring it back to North Texas to use to help people. Holy crap. Or at time of talking to you, I have a massage scheduled tomorrow with with a person who I find to be utterly brilliant and so unassumingly so, she will be able to say, okay, I'm getting ready to do some dynamic stretching with you. She'll pick my leg up and tell me, okay, now push against me for 3 seconds and breathe. Okay. And then she will press on a spot in my abdomen that I didn't know existed, that I didn't know hurt, that I didn't know could feel so much better. And you have conversations with her about bones and anatomy and blood flow. And it is all so unbelievable because you think about it, and I went to school for it. I took a month and a half of anatomy and a month and a half of movement. And the time that I spent learning anatomy and movement, you could have multiplied that by 25 and still not learned enough. There is so absolutely much to learn. And it's funny, whenever I go to take continuing education classes, to keep your license, you have to have 12 credits every other year to re-up your license. And it's funny because I will go to these classes and I realize that I am good. That is as far as I will ever say as a massage therapist. I know how to help people relax. I know a small bit of how to relieve your pain or to remove your tension, but I don't know how to heal. I haven't gotten that far. And I give a hard bit of respect to people that I look at and see are better than me, or they know more than me, or they are more practiced than me. But I go to these classes. So you can take them online or you can take them in a massage studio. And I went to a studio for my last two classes. And it was amazing to be in a room of some students and some veterans. And in each of those rooms, I was probably one of the most advanced people there. Moves that people didn't know they could do, I had already been doing them. And it was crazy to kind of be able to look at my spot in the massage journey and say, okay, well, I do know something. This is cool. I'm feeling stronger again. I'm feeling stronger in my choice in it, and I'm feeling stronger in what I know of it, even though I don't get to use it that much. And I gotta tell you, there was very little more humbling. Where I worked, the massage spa, the big box spa that I worked for, every few months, you would get booked by the lead therapist. There was a lead therapist who got paid more for his services because he logged enough hours that he was able to move up and charge more. He had been doing massage for 10 years. He knew how to do prenatal massage. He knew how to do craniosacral, something I desperately want to learn. He knew how to do sports therapy. All these things that require some level of focus or some level of learning, he knew how to do them. And every few months, he would book a massage with you. And as soon as you saw his name on your schedule, it was just scary. Because you just knew everything you got started to get confident about was going to get broken down and rebuilt. And he was really nice about it. He would tell you, okay, so you're doing this, but I bet you try doing it to the left and keep pushing until you hit a stopping point. He would do it in an instructional way, and he would say, so there, right there, that feels like a more complete move. And he would occasionally just relax and be quiet, but then he would bridge into talking about his favorite theatrical piece or his nephew and how he was helping raise him to be an adult. But then he would stop and he would tell you, okay, so what you just did to my shoulder right there, that was really good. keep that up. But here, I want you to try something with my neck right now. And it would just be 90 minutes of that. And it was nerve-wracking, but it was educational. And you're able to take that with you to the next person and do something new and do something good. And I would always be nervous, but I always loved it. But if you were listening to the last episode, and once again, this is a very convenient joke, but also a small truth. When you're paying for a wedding, you look to what pays you the best. And bartending pays me the best. I like massage. Sometimes I even love it. But it was not the right time for me to go full-time into it. I went to school in 2019 thinking at some point I was going to be a full-time massage therapist. I really did. I was having that bad of a time at my job. I was feeling that stale at my job that I went to massage school with the thought of becoming a full-time massage therapist within the next 2 to 3 years. And here's where being a jack of all trades, master of none, comes back in. When I started reading cookbooks and started paying more attention to mixology and the concept of building a multi-layered drink on your own, suddenly bartending became a lot more interesting and I wanted to focus more on it. Not the point. So becoming a good massage therapist, I got there with my time working at the big box massage place. But it was only 2 days a week. It wasn't paying amazingly, and I was hitting a glass ceiling. I could tell from a mile away, throw out the conversation about weddings being expensive and all of that. Throw out the conversation about that and just let me express to you once again the amount of time I would have had to spend learning new things, going to continuing education classes, taking on clients outside of working at the big box store, in addition to going full-time, to become better at it, to become the level of this girl who, woman, who works on me with dynamic stretching. This gentleman over here that I call a mentor who flew to India, to be like the massage sloth. Look him up on YouTube. He's a guy with a beard that is way too scraggly, but he's a very good instructional massage therapist who within the last year or so wrote a book. To be on that level would have required so much more time. And by the way, the patience of not making nearly as much money as bartending. Which, by the way, if I didn't have a wedding to pay for, or excuse me, to help pay, I don't know if I would have made the decision to go full-time into massage anyway. Because I repeat, becoming a bartender, a better one than I ever was, has happened these last few years. And it's led me to some really interesting and fun things. Let's get back to that for one quick second. In the last year and a half, I designed the two cocktails for my wedding. I may have done a bit of a take slash riff on a drink that my wife really loved from a restaurant, but I still had to reverse engineer it. And I'm very proud of what I did. But from the bottom up, I built the whiskey cocktail that was the his of the his and hers. I built that from the ground up, looking at recipes of how I like to cook and flavors that I like to put together. And since then, I have been recruited slash hired to be on a private bartending staff. Haven't got work yet, but the holidays are coming. I have since been paid by a law firm to design cocktails for them for a work retreat. Three cocktails. Several hours worth of purchasing and researching and mixing. And I actually took that very one of those recipes and sent it with my wife as she went to a bachelorette party, and they loved it. So at any given point, I have been a good bartender, bordering on really good, but never excellent, never at the level of a drink master. I have been a gamer, a good one, never to the point of JNaps or Chicago, where people are watching you on YouTube and you're making money off of it. And a massage therapist, a good one, but never to the point of a massage sloth where I'm writing a book or people are watching me on YouTube. Let's talk about this here podcasting for a second. And maybe that's how I'll let you guys off the hook. And by the way, let me just tell you, it is really, I will tell you two instances where being a jack of all trades or being good at something has made me have a very rewarding moment. So this guy used to come in, he owns an exterminating business, used to come in with his son. His son had freshly turned maybe 20, had freshly turned 21. So he and his son are sitting at the bar, and this guy, he's probably early 50s, sits down and says, "Hey, do you know how to make a mint julep?" I looked him dead in the face, because I'm a bartender and I've been around long enough to know, to be this type of bartender. I looked him dead in the face and I said, "Nothing like what you're used to. It's probably not a good idea that you order one. Because we don't have crushed ice. And we don't care nearly enough about that kind of a drink to make it well." And he said, "Well, what do you make? Can you make an old fashioned?" I said, "Sure." And he talked about the level of old fashioned that he used to love. I said, "Okay, you know what? I'm going to do a maximum effort old fashioned." And I muddle the orange and I do this and the that and the stir and the strain and I hand it to him. And he takes a sip and he says, He says, "20 years ago, I had a mentor in my chosen field who died a few years ago. This drink reminds me of drinking with him." And he started to tear up. You never would think that making a cocktail could invoke a memory that could cause tears. But I did that for somebody. This skill that I think a trained chimp could do, I was able to do that. And that's kind of cool. And not too terribly long ago, during one of those continuing education classes I was telling you about, everybody gets partnered up with somebody and you work on them and they work on you. And hey, here's this technique you want to learn. We're going to spend 10 minutes learning it. And then 20 minutes executing it until the instructor walks around and watches you and makes sure your hands are in the right place and your feet are positioned properly, so on and so on. And so I'm getting into some hard, heavy terminology here, but there is a concept in massage called a somatic release, S-O-M-A-T-I-C release, where emotional trauma is released through the manipulation of muscle or tissue or bone. And so, there is a move where I am working just at the shoulder. If we're getting real technical, I'm working medial to the shoulder. I'm working medial to the anterior deltoid. Another reason why I am jack of all trades and master of none is that I roll my eyes at myself when I start throwing around heavy terminology. Anyway, so I'm working towards the middle of the body from the front of the shoulder. And it's a very slow movement you have to use. It's a very slow movement and it's overly deliberate. And you could actually feel, one, you could feel the tension in that part of her body start to release, but she also started to tear up. And she said, I'm not totally sure what that was, but I really needed that. And she cried. And at the end of the massage, she said, thank you, and hugged me. These are strange moments that you just wouldn't picture as part of the massage process, but they're very real. And I'll tell you what, I will tell you this story, and then we'll move on. When I was working at the big box massage store, when you are the low man on the totem pole, you get the crappy schedule, you take any client that just shows up, and it's a place that takes walk-ins. So I got a walk-in. It was a Saturday evening. I'm one of two people on, and we at the time closed at 9 o'clock. So I'm one of two people on, and the other person has been around for a while, so they're always booked. So here I am just taking a walk-in. It's a girl who is, I want to say she was 19 or 20 years old. She was young. She decided to get massage on a whim, and she was super duper timid and super duper nervous. It was her first massage, and she explained to me how nervous she was about taking clothes off and laying on the table. She was nervous about a lot of things. And I was as pleasant as I could be to tell her, I will not see anything. You will be covered the whole time. This, that, everything, whatever. You are safe here. Okay. So as I am working on her, I'm catching more of the space where she is mentally and physically timid, bordering on scared. And you could tell that not only did she have some level of social anxiety, but she had some level of trauma in her youth about touch that she was working on live in the moment. Somebody did something to her when she was younger that she was not comfortable with. And you could tell it from a mile away, the way that she was guarding her body, the way that she was nervous about being in that space. Because people that sit down, people that lay on a table for a first time massage are nervous, but they are not scared. They're not timid. They are not at the same level that this young woman was. And at the end of the experience, she was more relaxed. She was more personal. She was more personable. She was more talkative. You could see that there was some level of wall she had just kind of broken through. There was probably another 10 to 20 that she needed to get through. But that was one. And I think about her to this day. When I think about the people I have worked on, some of the worst clients I've had, people who took calls on their Apple Watch while I'm working on them, people who didn't shower beforehand and stunk fresh from tennis matches, people who wiggle around like worms and don't make for good momentum, people who fart loudly. It's happened, I kid you not. I couldn't make it up if I wanted to. People like the first person I told you about who have an emotional release to the point that they cry, or somebody who, to my estimation, had some level of touch-based trauma, these are people that need massage. These are people that will grow so much more from it. And these are people that make me think, wow, I made a good choice doing this. And we loop back to the question of, gee, Hank, hey, how you doing? Why don't you become more focused in it? Why don't you become excellent at it versus just good? Well, my attention span is terrible. Thanks for asking. I repeat, there are too many interesting or fun things to do or learn that I just couldn't pick one. I probably could have gone to school for engineering or interior design or law or nursing or medical school. I could have picked one of those things that would have paid well. Or I could have picked one of those things where you have a very deep and specific focus, like accounting or actuary. I could have picked one of those. But it all seemed so constricting to just be interested and focused in on one thing. I just couldn't do it. What did I go to school for, by the way? I went to school for radio broadcasting. Once upon a time, I wanted to be the next Marv Albert. And then I wanted to be the next Howard Stern. And then I wanted to be the next Opie or Anthony. You get the idea. And so here I am at podcasting. Every so often, I hear my wife or my friends around me talking about how they listen to Joe Rogan or how they listen to Bill Burr or how they listen to whomever. And I won't lie, a little part of me becomes a small level of hater and says, my content is just as good as theirs. I have said before that listening to the Bill Burr Monday Morning Podcast felt like an episode of All of the Above Radio. But one of the main differences is his weekly proliferation of shows, a Monday and a Thursday, and the notoriety that came with the name Bill Burr. If you flipped his notoriety with my content, once upon a time, I was convinced that I would have that level of exposure. I would have that level of listeners. I have not listened to 2 seconds of Joe Rogan on Spotify. I have not listened to 2 seconds of Pat McAfee on Spotify or wherever the hell he is. But I know they exist. I've seen clips of them on YouTube. I see clips because they're celebrity guests said something really funny or really controversial, or they said something really funny or controversial. I've seen it all. And that level there's two things in this world, maybe three, more realistically, probably two, where I could, if I focused, probably ascend to the next level. And it's bartending or it's podcasting. I don't know that I could ever get to excellent or master of one as a massage therapist. I don't know that I could. Bartending, I kind of think I actually could. And this very thing that I do as I'm talking to you, I think I actually could. When it came down to it, and I've told you this over and over again, if I lacked a few things when becoming a podcaster. One, I lacked the capital. And two, I lacked the time. But I also have a gigantic fear of rejection. Back in the days when I used to hand my cards to people, I used to be very selective about who I gave my cards to. In the days of building, or when you're trying to build your podcast, if you're trying to truly focus in on making yourself a master of one, first of all, you better have no fear of rejection. Second of all, you better have a ton of focus. You can't just be good at creating content. You have to be good at marketing yourself. You have to be good at promoting. You have to be good at constantly writing. I mean, the same way I watched a video earlier today, funny enough, about Joe Rogan, or it was Joe Rogan interviewing Rick Rubin. Rick Rubin, for decades now, has been one of the most important producers of music. He was responsible for the Beastie Boys, the Red Hot Chili Peppers, Jay-Z. He has seen and done it all in terms of creating music and managing talent. And Joe Rogan, it was a 5-minute clip on YouTube where they talked about the songwriting process and the song creation process and how Eminem, for example, is constantly writing. He may not be writing lyrics, but he's always writing so that his hands are always steady, his mind is always moving, and his muscle is always being worked. Whereas Jay-Z will hear a track. He will just hear a beat, the bones of a song, and he'll sit in the corner and he'll just bob his head for 20 minutes and he'll say, okay, I'm ready. And he'll go into the studio. He hasn't written anything down. He just spits out a song and then does it a second time and changes the inflection, the same exact song. He never wrote it down. He just listened. He just listened to the track that somebody put in front of him and created a song from it. And Anthony Kiedis is another one Rick Rubin talked about to Joe Rogan. He said he'll listen to the song and he'll just kind of hum random gibberish to go over top of the song, and then he'll start, like a puzzle, piecing the words together, kind of cut and paste. The creation of this show is something similar, by the way. And I'm staring at an iPad that has Google Docs on it where I have taken notes, but the notes are seriously 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14 sentences. So 14 sentences has given us, we're looking at a little over an hour of conversation. And I spent a lot of time building my content and my writing, and not nearly enough time promoting, hitting the streets, and truthfully, researching what else it takes to be a better writer, a better orator, a better speaker. And as many times as I may have looked at podcasting conventions where I could have networked and started to become connected to other podcasters, I never did. The goal I once kind of sort of had, quietly, was to get bought out by SiriusXM and be a part of that network. To be a part of that network of people that you hear nationally. My dream was to sell out, for lack of a better word. So I'm sure at some point or another, Pat McAfee was just a guy who said, well, I'm done kicking in the National Football League, but I've got all these friends. Let me just start talking to people. Did he at some point dream that he was going to get bought out by ESPN? I don't know. But he worked at it. And I don't know whether or not I like the guy, but you know what? I respect the hustle. I respect the end result. Really, though, I absolutely admire that end result. I admire the Joe Rogans and Pat McAfees, and on a much more close to me level, the Chad Alexanders of the world. Sure, there's moments where I'm jealous of a Chad Alexander or a Dax Shepard or a Joe Rogan, because they were celebrities first and had access to all of these people, but they still worked at it to stay, to As Ric Flair once said, to be the man, you got to beat the man. And these people work every day at either beating the man or beating the people who want to become the man. And I will sit back on my semi-comfortable couch for a second and say to you, of all the things we've talked about, tennis, bartending, massage, video games, podcasting, indoor rock climbing, even taekwondo to some small level, I was never focused in on any of them enough to excel. I tend to think I am good at a lot of things. I'm also really not good at a lot of things, by the way. But to be called a jack of all trades and a master of none, I don't love it. Because it makes you sound like you're not committed. But at the same time, it's not an untrue statement. Where I am committed, I am not doggedly persistent. And let me give a little shout out to the man I still refer to this day as my closest friend in the world. The man who... The voice you hear at the beginning of this show, not only is that his voice, but that is his sound creation. That intro that he created, that man did roughly 95% of all of my audio, all of my sound drops, all of my intros, my commercials. He did it all. He wanted to be a master of one. He moved to LA. Well, first of all, he went to school for audio engineering. And then he went to a four-year college for music theory. He learned that he self-taught himself the piano. He sings, he raps. He learned the drums. All in the midst of, and knows how to use Pro Tools, Logic, all of these expensive, hard to learn programs and instruments, and then moved to LA to be in the thick of the music and recording industry. That's what it takes to be a master of one. That's the level of dedication it takes. And I admire anyone who goes after it in such a dogged fashion. Because I gotta tell you, I am doggedly persistent about a lot of things. I am so fascinated in a lot of things. And the hardest and the most annoying truth in the world is this. If I had more spare time, I would be interested in even more things. When I was in massage school, I said out loud to anybody that would listen, if I was 5 years younger, I would just keep going through school and go to chiropractic school, because I saw just the link that being a massage therapist and a chiropractor had. A good chiropractic office has a massage therapist in the building. No questions asked. I will die on that hill. Another interest that I have that I would love to learn more about. If I had infinite time in this world, if I had infinite money in this world, I would go back to school to learn supply chain. I am so fascinated by logistics and supply chain, and there are people that do it that are absolutely bored by it. I had a conversation just on this very couch, maybe about 2 months ago at this point, with a guy who works. He works logistics. And he started telling me about some of the nuances of his job. I was like, dude, you will always have a place here to tell me about all this. He says, really? I'm bored just talking about it. It was so interesting to hear. And funny enough, this couch that I am sitting on right now, bought it from Nebraska Furniture Mart. And It was coming from overseas. We bought it in December of 2020, I want to say, is the day that we signed the papers on it. And if you'll remember, during the pandemic, there was a large kerfuffle about supply chain because people were sick, so people weren't going to work. Or animals were sick, so they were killing off animals. And so the costs were going crazy and the supply was dropping, and because there was nobody to work. Everybody was home. Not me. I was still working, beside the point. But we got half of our couch. It's a sectional piece. We got half of it. Why, you ask? Because the other half was labeled wrong and was stuck in China. But wait, once it got on the boat sunk. The boat sunk and our piece of furniture was at the bottom of the ocean somewhere. And it was fascinating to hear the conversation of a very frustrated salesperson trying to tell me, hey, listen, I don't make any money until that furniture is delivered. I want it there as bad as you do. And I once had a conversation at the old restaurant I worked at, the Mexican joint. There was a convention of cattle ranchers. And so we were talking back and forth, and I just said, hey, man, so why is beef expensive? He talked about how one cow can go from a ranch in Texas to a plant in Oklahoma, but then can go to an appraiser in California, and then can go to a slaughterhouse in Michigan to go to a packing plant in Wisconsin, and then to a distributor in New Jersey, all to eventually be put on a truck to ship to your supermarket. And I just said, why does it take that many steps? He said, your guess is as good as mine. I would love to know why it takes that many steps. So, bartending, massage, and podcasting are three things I consider myself good at. Supply chain and chiropractic are two things I would love to learn more about. It's really funny. It's really funny to be good at something, to be in, we'll call it, the top 15%. To be in the top 15% of something and see how you could possibly get into the top 5 or even 2 to 3%. And you see a path towards it, but somewhere off to the side of the road is a whole other kiosk of things you could learn, or is a whole other... Let's bring this to just nearby parlance. You're driving to Jimmy John's to buy a sandwich. You've been thinking about that sandwich all day, but suddenly on the side of the road, and this is in a rural town, you see a fruit stand, or you see a little taco truck. And maybe you stop at both of those on the way and still get the sandwich at the end. Or maybe you get full from the other thing you decided you wanted to pick up. I applaud people that are so focused on one thing. Whether it's LP, the winner of Drink Masters, or slightly more locally, Elizabeth Hooker at Billy Can Can. Go see her, downtown Dallas. Or the massage sloth that I have watched videos when I had to really quickly remind myself how to do abdominal massage. I worked on somebody with diverticulitis once. Really, really weird, by the way. Really weird feelings happening at your fingertips, really weird sounds that you can create in the body when you work on somebody who has diverticulitis. And this podcasting, all of these things are things that at some point I have considered myself good at. And the Dax Shepherds of the world are at that top level. along with Massage Sloth, along with LP, to get to that level. I admire all of them because they dug in and said, this one thing, I'm going to do it. If there is to be a plan A, or if plan A is to succeed, there is no plan B. And of course, I will add my closest friend in the world into that bubble. Because he chose to go for it. They chose to go for it. Me, I choose to remain at the buffet and get fat. Which, by the way, is not a terrible thing. I'm old enough to be jealous for one quick second of people that are really good rock climbers, or people that have six packs, or people that drive F1. I am old enough and smart enough to know, yeah, I'm a little bit jealous of their talent, but I really admire their dedication. I'm too old to just be a hater for no reason. Usually. So to all of those of you who are a master of one, I ask you only this question. Do you feel like you missed out on anything focusing in on that one thing? Do you feel like there was something along the way that you turned and looked and said, oh, that looks fun. I wish I could do that. But you kept going. Do you still hold on to that and think, man, you know, I kind of wish I picked that up along the way? Supposedly, I don't know how true this is because we've never had this conversation. My mom had this conversation with me. Supposedly, my brother, who was once upon a time an industrial engineering major at Harvard, who has made endless amounts of connections and money in the engineering field and then in HR. Supposedly, he said to my mother once upon a time, he was jealous of me being a bartender and just having a job where I essentially can write my own hours and just make cash. This is me butchering the conversation. Apparently, at one point, my brother, who was very focused in on engineering, was jealous of me, the fly-by-night youngest of the family. So, to you, a master of one, is there ever a moment where you thought, man, I think I would have fun doing that, but I gotta keep on this? I mean, at some point, does Patrick Mahomes think, you know, I gave up playing basketball in high school so that I could go to Texas Tech and play football? What would happen right now if I just drove down to Oklahoma City and tried out for the Thunder? You know? And to all of you Janes and Jacks of all trades, I ask you, how many things are you good at? And would you trade all of those to be good at one thing? Would you trade it? If you can fix cars, if you can play the piano, if you can dance, would you trade it all to be able to play the guitar so well that somebody asks you to be in their band? Would you, if you were a good massage therapist, bartender, and podcaster, would you trade it all to be the top plastic surgeon in your city? Because I got to tell you, and I'll tell you what, I don't know that I could ever make this happen, but as I'm thinking about this, an interview I would love to somehow wrangle would be Dr. James Andrews. Some of you are familiar with that name. Dr. James Andrews is one of, or at least was, I don't know if he's retired, once upon a time was the most sought after orthopedic surgeon. he worked on every WWF/E professional wrestler and some of the biggest NFL athletes. People flew to him to get second opinions on their bodies and to have surgeries on their knee or their shoulder or their neck. Does Dr. James Andrews ever think, man, this is great, but I'm so jealous of my cousin Jack. Well, that was a happy accident. I'm so jealous of my cousin Jack. Anytime I need my oil changed, he just lays down on the ground in my driveway, in my 7-car garage, and just changes the oil for me. And then he can smoke a mean brisket. And I can't do either of those because I was so busy figuring out how to better work on people's knees. You know? So I ask you, Jack of all trades, Jane of all trades, would you trade everything you're good at to be excellent at one thing? And I ask you, Master of One, would you trade that one thing to be good at a bunch of things so that you could walk into almost any room and be some level of successful? I leave that to all of you. allofthe.aboveradio@gmail.com. I look forward to the possibility of conversation with you, whether or not you would trade whatever it is you are for the other thing, or do you like where you're at? And the further question, if you really want to go that far, is what would you do about it to go the other way? Because you know me, I'm all about, you know, moving forward and all that good stuff. So I will leave you with that for today. I think we've had a good conversation today. What about you? I think we'll do this again soon. And soon after that, and soon after that, and soon after that. My name is Hank. This has been All New, All Different, All of the Above. May there be a next time. I say till next time.